No, they're just sweatpants he used to use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just repackaging his old sweatpants and selling them.
It's a good business idea.
Yeah.
Repackaging selling old clothes.
People do that, right?
I mean.
Oh, but to people online. Hello. Hi. Hey, everyone. Welcome to GameSpot After Dark episode 233. I think I got that right. I am your host this week, John Lee Sipe, and I am joined to my left this time in a surprise move. More
shuffling around, mixing it up. I'm on the left.
Yeah, this is weird. I have to look back and forth. Like, oh, I don't know if my neck can handle it. Also joining me on the right, Jake Decker.
Hello.
Squeaky chair.
Jake's got the squeaky chair.
Yeah.
Lucy.
Hello.
Over on the far right, you got the short chair.
I always sit here, though.
You do, but you got the short chair this week. So we'll see how much you shrink.
My neck is very long.
Yeah, if we like do a time lapse, you'll shrink down throughout the episode.
Oh, like the Final Fantasy interview.
Yes.
Oh, we need to get different chairs.
We do. We're working on it.
Yeah. I don't know.
We're working on it.
Oh, now they're not making noise.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You got turn.
Stage fright?
You have to turn, not rock.
That's what I was doing.
Turn slowly.
That sounds bad. That sounds bad. I'd hate to be listening to this podcast right now.
All right. Well, hey, it's another week in video games. I guess kind of slowed down for like a hot minute, right? Are we kind of in the clear for a minute of big releases now?
For a little bit.
Big releases?
Don't
yeah,
say
kinda.
That. That's how you jinx it.
Yeah.
Do you think someone's gonna like that. Shadow drop?
What would even possibly shadow drop?
Hollow Knight Silk Song.
I don't think that'd be a jinx, though. I think it would be very.
I would be livid if that happened.
Yeah. I know someone who'd be very happy about that, though. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's slowing down, but that doesn't mean we don't have a lot to talk about because we didn't get to talk about it last week because it like just came out and me, Jake, and Kurt hadn't played it yet, but we now have, which is Dragon's Dogma 2.
Oh yeah, I started playing it. Mm-hmm. I'm not very far in at all because I was very sleepy.
Mm.
But I'm down to hear your thoughts after. How long have you spent with it?
I've played like 12 hours or so. I played a good amount during the weekend, but then my brain was like, oh, hold on. You're in the middle of Final Fantasy VII
yeah.
Remake. You want to finish Yakuza Like a Dragon so you can go on to Infinite Wealth. Mm-hmm. So I kind of let off the gas a little, but I plan on returning to it this weekend again. Yeah. But yeah, I've played like 16 hours, and I think it is fantastic.
You went from 12 to
16. Or 12? Did I say 12?
You said 12.
Yeah.
It's probably 12 then. But I think it's fantastic.
Within those two sentences, you put in another 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I figured it out. I figured out time.
He's counting porn time. PAWN.
I was going to say, wait a second.
What?
Then my hours would be a lot higher.
Is it the time your porn spent in other people's games?
Oh, okay. No? How does that work? I haven't like messed too much with that. How do you know?
I don't know.
How do you know what?
How do you know like if your pawn has been like?
Oh, it tells you.
Yeah, you send them on quests.
Send them on quests. You assign them a quest.
Oh.
Yeah.
But they still stay in your game, so it's not like they leave. It's like a.
It's usually when you sleep.
Okay.
When you're sleeping, they're off doing their own thing, and then when you wake up, it was like, oh, your pawn's back
in the game,
and you specifically. The game doesn't know when you're sleeping.
That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's like, hey, your pawn's been on an adventure and has got this stuff for you. Usually when they're done doing quests for another player, they're dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're dismissed, the player can usually give them items to take back. So a player could give you some nothing. But the more important thing is that they remember what they've done on those adventures. So if you're like running through an area that they've already done, they'll be like, hey, I know where to go. I did this.
Oh.
And they'll be like, come with me. Or they can take you to like objectives. Like if you pick a quest and you're like, I'm gonna do this quest and it's already done, the pawn is already done, you'll be like, master, I know where this is, follow me. And you can be like, go. Or if you're in an area, it can be like, hey, there's a treasure over here, I'm pretty sure, or there's a cave down there, I'm pretty sure, you can follow me and I'll take you there.
I don't want them to call me master. I think
that's all they're programmed to say, master. And every one of the pawns calls you master, whether you're one of theirs or not, because it's like the Arisen is just the master of all pawns.
Yeah,
yeah.
So. And they're like coming from like alternate realities or like world like timelines.
They're also just like walking around in the overworld.
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
And when
they're constantly bugging me to
join
my party.
Like hit you with their like Tinder bio immediately. They're just like, hey, I'll do this. I'm great at picking things
up.
I'm kind-hearted. I'll never speak out of turn. And then you select.
Like going on long walks.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
I like picking them up and throwing them.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is pretty entertaining.
Yeah. Who did you make as your pawn? I made Blythe from Elden Ring.
Oh, that's pretty good.
He's my main boy.
Yeah.
He's my main boy.
I didn't base it off anything. I just made random characters. I wish I had put more thought.
Blythe, the nickname I've given him is Babs.
I don't remember.
Mine's called Main Pawn because I didn't see where.
Main Pawn.
Hey, you'll always know.
Yeah. So the other day I tweeted,
"Shout out to Main Pawn."
Main Pawn might be mine, and people are like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" I'm like, "I didn't see the how to name bit. I must have like buttoned through it by accident. So now I've just got Main Pawn."
Defaults to Main Pawn. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think I did recruit Main Pawn, and I was like, "I don't want a character named Main Pawn," and threw him up.
Main Pawn's a good archer, though. So.
I think it was an archer too.
Yep, that's my main pawn. Was it a woman?
But it does tell you. It
was a woman. Yeah, that's my girl main pawn.
It does tell you which person made it.
Yeah.
Oh, it does. I don't look hard enough. I'm just like, come on, join me, and then they fall in water.
You don't look hard enough. He doesn't.
I'm bummed because I'm on PC, so I can't.
I'm on PC.
Okay, so I can get your pawn.
You can get Blythe.
Oh, I'm on Xbox.
I think they're cross platform.
Oh, they are cross-platform.
I think so.
Kurt and Devina lied to me and said that it wasn't, but
well, can't trust Kurt.
We're probably on. If we're not, we can. My pawn.
Go on.
Yeah. Oh, I was just gonna say my pawn is my cat Brinks.
Brinks.
So we like recreated Brinks.
Oh my god.
Took a lot of time to really get the fur and the coloring just right. Very difficult because she's got a lot of
texture, detail,
color. And so yeah, now I have Brinks, and yeah, it is weird because she's just like, "Hello, master. I shall take you this way," and I'm just like, "She does not behave like that."
No,
she doesn't talk like that.
Yeah, she's got a regional accent. Oh, I should have made peanut and jelly next time. How many pawns can you make? You need to make loads.
You can only make one, and that's your main pawn.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then the others you have to hire.
Yeah, so you have your character and then a pawn. Yeah. That's
so far, I've hired Captain Levi from Attack on Titan. Just showed up and said, "Hey, what's up?" And I said, "Dude, you're a thief. Get in my party. Let's go."
Yeah, I hired Patches.
Oh, that's a good one.
Patches, yeah, I found Patches.
Patches.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a bold white
guy. I thought about starting again, but those first few hours are an uphill struggle. Every moment in that game is an uphill struggle, so...
Every moment I live just, is
exactly.
agony.
So I was
but
like,
I mean, you're going downhill the mountain, though.
It's not... I'm not sure about that.
You're going down the mountain to the...
You are, but like... I understand, but also like getting attacked by random dragons and...
It's true. Like, I love it, though. I'm like, oh, I'm so into it so far. I feel like I've barely scratched the surface, though, because I'm only like 6 or 7 hours in. Like, I kind of like just got to the main town, which... Because I like really took my time to like explore that opening area and see... everything, and it was just like, "Ooh, what's over there?" And then it was like this, you know, you just find a cave and it takes you like all over the place, and then you spend like 45 minutes fighting a troll.
You can find like
it's lovely.
Yeah, usually the caves will lead you, so most of the time they lead you to like one of the special stones that you can and it will give you like a special pawn out of it, so you can be like, "Oh, this one's an extra powerful one."
I haven't done that
but
yet.
Then you can find them on the I think you can add them as a favorite, and then you can go to Pornhub and find them there.
I was waiting to see how long it would take for someone to make that joke.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't play the original. Tam, you played the original, right?
Yes.
How much of this game is like was that first game?
They made that game again.
Okay, because I noticed how like the title.
The pawns are smaller.
Also, the title screen is just called Dragon's Dogma, yep.
Not Dragon's
Dogma 2.
2.
And I was like.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yep. Yeah. I was like, that's interesting.
I think, like, it makes perfect sense. They were like, this game's great. Nobody played it, so let's just remake
Try
the game.
Again.
I mean...
Release it on Switch. Still nobody
You could
played.
Argue that's kind of what Demon Souls and Dark Souls, to some degree. I mean, to it's a degree, different, but, like, they were kind of just like, hey, let's just do that again, but differently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't want this fight, John Luke.
Okay. All right. I was just trying to make a little whatever.
you're right in it in a way. Like the spiritual successor part of it.
Sure, sure.
Demons to Dark is very, very present.
Yes, those two games are
this feels
different.
Like they didn't really add anything. They didn't expand it in any major ways.
Okay.
They just used the technology that's available to them now to make the experience of playing Dragon's Dogma more interesting and easy.
Sure. So it's like the... the ideal experience maybe they wanted to do but couldn't.
They could have called this director's cut and it would have been perfectly fine.
Except they already did a director's cut, so they couldn't do that.
Dark Arisen too.
I completely agree with, I think it's Austin from Skill Up channel.
Austin, yeah.
Was saying how it has that like Lord of the Rings party adventure type quality to it. And like that's the vibe I get playing it, where it's just like it's me and my pawns and we're going on a little adventure and we're gonna fight a cave troll and I'm gonna climb on his back.
And then my pawn walked into the lake, and then I threw my other pawn into the lake. You know.
Just like in Lord of the Rings.
Just like in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. It very much is that Lord of the Rings meets Skyrim style, where it's like,
oh yeah,
this is a big open world, gonna see what's in there, and then I've got my friends along with me, who are occasionally very annoying. They talk way too much.
They do talk way too much, that is true.
Little chatty Cathys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite ones are, because I have not accidentally, but I just picked the pawns that I was... thought would be most useful. They're all women, and one of them keeps pointing out that it's a party of women. She's like, I've just noticed this is a group of women. Interesting. Is it interesting?
Well, not only that, if your pawn is then, I guess that makes sense now, because if your pawn visits like another person, they'll come back and they'll talk about other people. Yeah. So like, the last master I was with had a party of all women. Isn't that interesting? And you're just like, cool.
Can you help me with this griffin or not?
I know a lot has been said, but I think about this aspect of the game, but I just love how exploration focused it is and how it really just emphasizes like trying to entertain you or give you exciting things to do while going from point A to point B, rather than like it's cheesy, but it's all about the journey, not the destination, you know? And it feels really authentic in the way it is, where it's like, I'm just like, I don't really care about the quest I'm doing or the objective. I'm just excited to get there, which I think is such a cool thing that I feel like you don't see a whole lot in modern video games. I would say like Zelda is probably a good example of it. But I feel like for a while there, we kind of got stuck in this sort of like, here's all the question marks on the map. You just got to go to them. You can fast travel around the map. Like we can make getting across the map as easy as possible. We just don't want you to think about traveling. We just want you to be shooting or slicing while this just feels like, like, I don't know, I just like strolling through the field and with my pawns, and then I see something interesting and I stroll over to it, and then all of a sudden a griffin shows up and I'm like, all right, let's go.
Is it leveled by, you know, can you come up against an insurmountable foe?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
There's like major, like there's a dragon just knocking about, and it is clearly way too hard to beat when you start, but it's like the Ganon of that game, where it's like your ultimate goal is to kill that dragon.
Gotcha.
And it's just knocking about. Or one of your ultimate goals is to kill that dragon. And it's just there. And if you try and fight it, it will kill you very quickly. So you kind of just have to maneuver your way around it. And the journey is very much the point, especially for the early stages, the quests are kind of not great. Like
I agree.
Yeah, it's very much how do we get this person out of these hub areas, which are also not great, into the open world where they can do stuff and see stuff. And it is a game where if you try and play it quickly, you will have the worst possible time.
Yeah. It's like a D&D campaign, right? Where it's like, it's about building up the party, just like soaking in the atmosphere. Like you're there for the bants.
It's about like picking a small objective and trying to do it. Like I'm gonna go from here to that cave, explore that cave, and try and get back before nightfall, because nightfall always gets way harder.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm gonna try and go to that cave, explore it, and then I know there's like a campsite here. I've got a camping bag. I'm gonna rest there and then continue my journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of like the hub areas and stuff, they are kind of boring, but I had a troll attack the capital, and it was just like this giant troll running through, like picking people up, throwing them across, climbing on buildings, and like me and all the guards were like, all right, we're taking this thing down, and we're chasing it across the city while people are screaming and shouting.
This is
amazing. And I'm like, this is pretty cool. Like it's like on fire running into buildings and stuff. It was just it was pretty cool. It was a cool moment. It killed a lot of people. Don't know how that'll affect progression, but
whatever.
Kind of I don't know. That makes it kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well, when people die, they get taken to the cemetery, Or like the mausoleum.
To the, yeah.
And then if you have a like a revival stone, you can bring important characters back to life. Mm. Yeah. But if they're there for too long, they rot and die. So.
Oh. I love that. Yeah, oh.
I love that. Have you encountered the dragon's plague yet?
No, but
I've been trying to.
I'm so excited.
I'm really intrigued by it.
It takes a while.
So much piss as well, because everyone was like, oh my god, why? This game's broken, blah, blah, blah. It's like, maybe it's fun to have consequences.
There's a lot of amazing ideas. There's an arrow in that game,
which
you can only fire once, and it will, wherever it hits, it instantly kills. Like, it's a one-hit kill, but the game also, as soon as you let go of the arrow, it auto-saves. So you have to live with the consequences. If you miss, it's gone forever. If you kill like an NPC, it's gone forever. But like you could save it for the last boss and just be like, bam, done.
That's what I would do. I think this game, like playing it, it gives me the same vibe and energy that I feel like when I first played Far Cry 2.
Ooh,
back
like
in the
systems.
Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where it's just like, you know, hey, like the story and why you're doing these things isn't really the point. It's more about like the systems, about exploring this space, about the way the game causes friction. Because like, I mean, like people complain about how in Far Cry 2, like in that game you get malaria and then you'll just have like malaria attacks. So like hearing the Dragon's Plague was giving me flashbacks to like getting malaria like attacks randomly in the middle of like battle and being like, yes, I want that. More things like that. I love when a game
it's really funny because
pushes
everyone,
against me.
Everyone's like, oh my God, why didn't we know about this thing? The pawns actually mention it immediately, like pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
The pawn will be like, I've heard about a strange affliction that is hurt, like that is impacting the pawns where the Arisen starts to lose control and they will like not listen to them. And like he's giving you clues about like, this could go bad. And someone else will be like, we should keep an eye out for that.
Right.
Like, okay, cool.
Maybe it's just because you hear it in like the in between like 20 other
things.
In
between, there's a ladder over here.
Yeah. Oh my God. The ladders. I'm just like, shut up. I don't care. I'm done with ladders.
Yeah. They really like to tell me that my party is a composed party where everyone's a different class.
Oh yeah.
Every now and then they do this thing where they're like, just over here, Master, there's a treasure. And then they'll run for 15 minutes. And it's like, what do you mean just over here? Crazy.
Yeah. Right. It's good. I like it quite a bit. I feel like I barely scratched the surface on it, but it's like...
Yeah, I'm going to dig in this weekend.
It does that thing where it makes every vocation or class really, really interesting and worth your while to go through. Especially like when you pick like the mage and like, you know, oh, halfway in or like during that development, you basically unlock the ability to fly. And it's just like really weird stuff like that. The like fighter or one of the other ones can do this thing where they'll use their shield to basically launch pawns up into the air. So you can like give people a piggyback onto larger enemies and stuff like that. So all the archers as well is really, really fun. Even when you start, one of the first abilities you get is like you hit jump and then hit kick in midair. And if you connect with an enemy, they do a backflip away. And you can like shoot your bow and arrow in the when you land in the or in midair as well to do
badass.
Like it's and you can do like sliding maneuvers and that kind of stuff. They basically genuinely looked at Legolas and were like, how can we make this a video game mechanic?
I can't tell if you are all trying to pander to me with all of the references.
It is pretty much he is Legolas, like or your pawn or your Arisen can be Legolas.
Okay, that's good because I picked the archer.
Yeah, it is.
You can also change vocation anytime, which is good.
I mean, you can pretty much, the point is to change it because like usually there's some sort of ability that will change the way that class can be played.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just know like, oh, I need to be an archer for this battle. Or there's certain quests where it's like, there's an early quest chain where you're helping an elf figure out why he's having problems shooting his bow and arrow and hitting.
Is that a euphemism?
Yeah. he's having like performance anxiety with his bow, and like you have to be an archer to do that quest.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah, but you can just go to the tavern and like all the battlements and change it and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it is very good in making sure that you always are having fun and you're encouraged to change things. The only downside to begin with that makes it hard is like it's very difficult to carry a lot of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can like move stuff between the pawns, but that's always the thing I found kind of annoying in games.
Yeah,
like, okay, I have to stop annoying. And I have to move it back and forth. And
especially since the camping packs are very, very heavy.
Yes.
So if you have like two of them, you basically are. The penalties for being heavy aren't severe, It's not like you suddenly can't move like some games.
Yeah.
But it just means that you will slow down and
your stamina.
Yeah, your stamina.
Last oh, yeah. Long.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can just keep an eye out for these golden beetles. They're pretty much everywhere, but like every time you grab one and consume it, it adds a little more like
oh,
weight to you. You
yeah.
probably see them on trees.
Oh, yeah. I have them. I didn't
collect
know
all those beetles and eat
yeah,
them up.
Get those beetles.
All right, well, I'm going to go eat a bunch of beetles when I get home.
Yeah. One thing, too, I didn't realize when I started playing is I thought every time you camped, it like burned a camp. Setup.
No.
So I was like, I gotta have like three of them just in case I'm out for a long time. And then I found out that, oh no, they only get destroyed if you're camping, you don't clear out enemies, and the enemies destroy
yeah,
your
so
camp.
Each, there's like different levels of camping packs, and the lower level ones, when you're attacked, and you're, if you're asleep and you're attacked, they're usually destroyed. It will destroy the encampment. The higher you go, the more resilient the camping equipment is. So you can like for example, yesterday I was attacked by a bunch of goblins, but because I had a higher tier camping equipment, I could just fight the goblins off and then reuse it. So it's just a matter of like disposability. Yeah.
That's cool.
It is cool.
Also, yeah. I got that FMV meat. When you camp,
they do. People yeah. are very upset about it, but
I don't why.
Do
why are people upset?
Why?
About it?
That's cool.
Know. People are upset about a lot of things with this game that I feel like they don't fully understand.
Yeah,
it looks really good as well. Like
it,
clearly,
it does. Yeah,
they were like, "How can we be as entertaining with our food as we are?"
Yeah, they're like, "Oh, well, let's break out the red camera for this one."
Yeah, because I mean, just to kind of like, I don't know, I don't want to touch too much on like all the microtransaction stuff, but I feel like this game. Is it kind of follows its own rules in a way that many open worlds do not. And because of that, I feel like if you don't play this game, but you see those microtransactions and stuff, I can see why people would think
sure.
that's annoying or unfair. But like,
well, I think the
like being able to fast travel more, I think would make this game considerably worse. Like,
I think people have been primed to like see microtransactions and assume,
especially
like,
for something around fast traveling.
Yeah,
right?
You like, assume the game has been like carved up and compromised for those microtransactions. But playing the game, I could definitively say like that doesn't feel the case at
no,
all.
No, it's very much an optional thing, and a lot of people didn't really like. We didn't mention it in our review because we didn't really dig into the.
It wasn't even available at that point.
Yeah,
right?
It wasn't available, but like I think it's mentioned in the documentation, but we were like, we don't want to get spoiled. We don't want to look at stuff ahead of time.
Right.
And also like, so we didn't see it, but the review just did not, afterwards I was like, this is going to change anything. And I thought to myself, is this going to, do I need to have it redone or something like that? I was like, no, it's completely ignorable.
Sure.
Yeah. And all the items that they're selling, like you can find very easily early in the game. It's expensive, but that's kind of the point. Like, you're not supposed to be able to easily get
fair. Yeah, it's not expensive because they're trying to say microtransactions are expensive because it feels like that's the way the game intentionally designed itself.
Yeah,
so, yeah. I mean, I understand why people would, like, out of context see it and, like, assume the worst. But, like, no, I don't think it compromises the game. Do I wish they weren't selling microtransactions for a full price game? I don't think they ever should, personally. Mm-hmm. That's my Jean-Luc stance on things, but...
Yeah, I mean, like the issue is
don't buy them.
Yeah, do the micro. Can you tell whether? Usually, you can tell whether the microtransactions have informed the design of the game, like you said.
Yeah.
Like there's no grind beyond the intended grind in this game that comes from the core design. There's no part of there where it's like, oh, you need to level up your character to this degree, and we're gonna make it very hard. But if you buy this thing, it'll be quicker. That just does not happen.
Yeah.
If you are perceiving something as being a difficulty. And then believe it is because to encourage you to buy a microtransaction, you're probably incorrect. That's instead the way the design is made. They don't want you to buy fairy stones. They want you to look at the ox carts and use those as a way to get around. So it's, there's literally nothing in there that I would say is even remotely essential to have.
Totally. So just ignore that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Master Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yeah, it's worth playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
9 out of 10.
9 out of 10, GameSpot. That's all I want to play right now.
Yeah.
But you know what else happened over the weekend? You two were at PAX.
Oh yeah, we were at PAX.
Yeah, remember that? That was 4 or 5 days ago. how was PAX?
PAX was nice. We were there with Giant Bomb. We did a couple panels. Thank you to everyone who came out and said hi. PAX West last year was my first ever, and so I didn't realize that show was so much bigger, but I think PAX East is just a really nice like, I don't mean this in any negative way, just a manageable show. Like, I still didn't manage to see everything, but it was not, like, spread out over so much space.
Yeah, not like three buildings. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what you mean by bigger versus
one hall.
Like,
yeah,
one hall. Yeah. Well, how would you rate the experiences between the two now? They've done both.
I think I preferred West, I think. Okay. But also, I did East just after I'd done DDC, and I was already
That's not an ideal.
You didn't get to take a train.
I didn't get to take a 24-hour sleeper train.
Yeah, the overall experience of going to West and then being in West was really, really cool and fun compared to East. But both shows are fun. I feel like, I understand that this is what a lot of people want. I feel like a lot of conventions these days have become elaborate ways to sell people things and buy things. I've seen it done in more severe ways. I think PAX is good because it also gives a bunch of people other ways to come together and interact and have fun. You have those gaming sections where you can sit down and play board games, and
the tabletop section is always my favorite.
Yeah, the speed AG games done quick section
that's so cool.
GDQ was there.
They didn't have that when I was there.
Yeah. So the main floor was more just like, do I want to buy anything? And to be fair, I did buy stuff. I was walking around and I found some cool stuff that I wanted to buy. Sure. I only bought one thing, which was like a card game, like a competitive card game, Magic the Gathering style, but it's designed to teach you how to speak Japanese.
I think I've heard of this
game. It's really cool, yeah. Yes. I mean, like, I was listening to the guy talk about it, and he was like, by the time you're done playing this game and you've mastered it, you will have the ability to speak at an elementary grade school standard. And I know how to do that already.
Same guy, like, tried to sell it to me at APAX. Like, probably. He's probably been there for years. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I won't learn anything from this because I've studied it, but I will at least get to see how the design is making people or aiding people in learning. So I'm excited to dig into that. And then there was some like other like art stuff. Like they had like a Metal Gear Solid lithograph style thing,
which
was really cool.
Thing?
That box thing. That was really
cool.
Yeah.
How were like the game stuff? Because I remember when I went to PAX East back in like 2011 to like 2015, they actually did have like some decent like booths there where you could go play like Gears of War 4 or like The Darkness 2 or like Outlast. Like they actually had like a couple of big games that I remember when I first went was like, whoa, I can wait 3 hours in line and play a game for 20 minutes and I would do it. Nowadays I'm like, I'm over it, I don't need to do that anymore. But
I mean, they had a Baldur's Gate 3 booth, they had New Blood, they had, honestly, I didn't spend too much time.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, also like they just
did, but
yeah, they didn't. I don't think they had very many games to play.
Sure.
Yeah, like, not out there. Nothing that was like, oh, brand new. This is the only place.
They also had a bunch of stuff that just was at GDC. Like, there was that game about Kevin. Oh, I forget what it's called. But, like, there was a bunch of stuff that was in the GDC awards that was there.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, the indie section is always, like, where the really good stuff is.
Yeah.
So, no, I had a really nice time with it. I think it's a really fun show. The vibes were really nice.
Mm.
Because the vibes at, you know, DICE and GDC, where it's all like kind of the business side is a little jaded and sad, and that's totally understandable. But it just felt really good to be at a show where everyone was just excited to play games again, and I think that was very infectious. And you know, the crowds at the panels were just really hyped, and it was just a nice, refreshing reminder.
Yeah.
Of the good in games.
It's almost like a rejuvenating for the soul.
Yes,
in a 100%. Way. Yeah.
But I am super sad that I didn't get to spend. Like, I don't know. There's never enough time to do everything.
Yeah, sure. I'm bummed I didn't get to spend more time at the speedrunning stuff.
Yeah.
Because that was the stuff I really wanted to see. I mean, like, to be fair, going into it, I didn't realize that GDQ was even there in a major way. But it turned out, like, they were having, like, full-on runs being done.
Yeah,
and
but I don't think they were doing charity stuff.
No.
I think it was just, like, GDQ's on the ground floor.
Wow. And we had like loads of panels to do and stuff.
Wait.
They're all VOD.
Do they still have the Steel Battalion room?
Yes. I saw the Steel Battalion. Well, I don't think it's a room, but they definitely had a Steel Battalion set up for someone.
Every year I've been there for like 10 years, they always have a room set up with a ton of original Xboxes and full Steel Battalion setups with like LAN.
Yeah, I don't know if it's multiple, and, but I saw one.
Yeah, and then like you can like bring people in and they'll like basically run, do like a crash course, and then you get to do like a multiplayer match, like a 4v4 with Steel Battalion. Cool. So if you've ever wanted to like experience that insane controller setup, PAX is the way to do it. It's cool.
They had that room where you could just, they had a bunch of consoles set up and you could just rent games. And like, because Grub and like a few others, Snowback Mike and a few others were playing Power Stone on Dreamcast. And
someone was playing
Def Jam and etc.
There was someone with a dance mat.
Yeah.
Yep.
As he got in.
Yeah.
Somehow Mike Minotti got a Sora amiibo when he walked into that room. Not sure how that happened.
Are those even out yet?
Yeah.
Oh. He was just holding it. I was like, where did you get that?
Yeah.
It was Grub's birthday. It was Bacalar's birthday.
Grub won, right?
Grub won a lot of money
betting on hockey.
Oh, is that what the sport was? I had no idea.
Yeah, hockey.
I thought that's what you said it was.
Oh, I made that up. I was just like, football, hockey? Ah.
It was hockey, yeah. It is hockey. 11-game parlay, apparently. Which means a lot of money. Yeah. A lot of money.
Wow.
I feel like I need to go back to PAX East because I've gone once and it was like 2016 and it was like,
it was negative
10 in with wind chill.
Well, they're moving it to May next year.
Okay, so now I'm more interested, but I was so miserable. Yeah. Like I was just not prepared for that at all. And I remember a Lyft driver was like, yeah, it's weird because last weekend it was like 60 degrees. God, I wish it was last weekend. This is brutal.
Yeah, it's Boston weather for you, baby.
The short walk, I just remember the short walk from the Uber to the convention. I was like, if I was here 30 more seconds, I would probably die. Like,
we had the tunnel.
Yeah, we found a tunnel between our hotel and the convention.
Oh, because you guys were...
Was it haunted?
No, but it was like three times as long as going overground.
Yeah, it was... ridiculous.
Yeah, Grub was obsessed with this tunnel, and I did it for the first time.
I'd be obsessed with the tunnel too, I think.
It's cool, but...
it's a tunnel.
It takes forever.
It adds 10 minutes.
And when you get there, you can't go in from the tunnel. You have to go outside and go around.
The worst part of the tunnel is when you emerge outside, you can see inside the hotel lobby where you would have been if you had just crossed the road.
Yeah.
So you can be like, you come out and you're like, I was there. And I wanna, 10 minutes
like,
later.
Like the
I'm
way
here.
US cities are designed and infrastructure, it's not that interesting. So no, when you see well. Like a tunnel, we yeah. get really
I mean, it
excited.
Was exciting. It
We're
was
like,
exciting.
Wow.
I want a tunnel walk through next year, you know?
Okay. Like, yeah. We'll give you the tunnel tour.
Yeah, tunnel tour. Were there any snakes down there?
No, zero tunnel snakes. I think they'll be back once the Fallout show is out.
Okay, makes sense.
If the tunnel snakes aren't in the Fallout show, what is even the point?
Where does that show take place in the Fallout universe?
It takes place in California, doesn't
California,
it?
No tunnel snakes there.
Oh, damn. Shame. Yeah.
The Boston Boys? I don't know.
DC.
Oh, yeah. Not really.
Tunnel snakes.
Maybe the California chapter.
Yeah, that's Neither the California I. chapter of the tunnel snakes. Oh,
yeah.
Well, was there anything else you guys checked out?
Yeah, we saw, that was PAX was that. GDC was fun. We saw a bunch of things there.
Right, right.
Mm. We've got a game sent in the office now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah. Where
do.
Is that?
It's on my desk.
It's Lucy's desk, okay. But yeah, that's the official office game sent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should shoot a video with that. Yeah. It was very fun. It wasn't that bad. Like it was gimmicky as hell. You know, but.
Sure.
I was like, oh, this is it. Actually works.
Pleasant.
Fair play. Yeah, it works, and it's not like hideous looking.
It's not overpowering either.
Mm.
It doesn't look cheap.
It has an app, and at the end, if you're done with your scents, you can just hit a button, and it just gets.
What are the what scents does it come with by default?
Gunpowder.
Okay.
Forest. Fire.
Okay. Yeah.
Rain. I want to say.
Okay.
I'm not sure. And then clean air and something else.
I mean, Dragon's Dogma 2 seems like the perfect game to test it with.
No, gunfire, but you know everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, fire.
Definitely
yeah.
regular fire. I think.
Regular fire. Yeah.
Or smoky? I don't know. I should double check. I haven't opened it yet.
It would be good if they. We talked about this with them, but we were like, "Are you working with developers to make packs like that?" And I think they indicated they were trying to. Yeah.
Sure.
So it'd be like, "Oh, you know, the the Elder Scrolls pack is coming out, and you buy this thing and it will make it smell like the next Elder Scrolls game. God. Or, you know, the Spider-Man pack.
I just don't want that, though. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just don't want that.
Elder Scrolls smell like?
I don't want my apartment to smell like anything other than what it's supposed to smell like.
But I kind of want to know, like, their version of, like, what's Nernroot smell like, you know?
Yeah, right? That's cool.
They also own the Smell-O-Vision patent now. Or the Smell-O-Vision IP, the trademark.
Oh.
They purchased it, which they told us in our interview. So they are the Smell-O-Vision company now.
Sounds like a waste of money.
The guy who was, like, the biz guy on this kind of went, yeah, I invented the digital photo frame and what was it? He invented
the first
Android tablet before the iPad stuff. And I was like, who is this man?
Yeah,
it's culminated into the Game Scent.
And then all roads lead to Game Scent.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, the use case for it is like streamers. Like once you get it hooked up to
Right.
And you can make, you know.
Oh, yeah, that'd be pretty funny.
Bits to make it smell like dog shit or something like that. And then it's like, okay, cool, that'll be funny.
Once again, wouldn't want to do that in my house, but
no.
I don't definitely.
I don't want my house smelling like dog shit.
Yeah, I'm good.
Cat piss only.
She stopped peeing on my bed, so that's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, she was a little stressed, so she's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that, I mean, and then.
That was it. That was PAX. PAX GDC.
We also saw the NVIDIA AI stuff.
That sounded kind of cool. As much as I hate to say.
Explain what I've heard. There is a thing, but I don't know specifically what it is.
So three different ones.
Okay.
So Convey.
Okay.
Which is the one that's kind of working with, I believe, Unity right now. Yeah. We saw NVIDIA's version, and we saw Ubisoft's one. So they were basically.
And what do they do?
So it was using the. Oh, I'm going to use the NVIDIA example. It was basically a character that they'd written, basically a character sheet for, and a backstory, and they kind of had sliders to be like, oh, this character is empathetic, or this character is religious.
More aggressive,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then you were dropped into this scenario where you basically had to infiltrate a hotel, and you had to talk to the NPCs to find out which room someone was staying in, and then figure out a way to get up to that room. And you had to talk, like push to talk, and you could communicate with the NPCs. And so there was a guy who was a doorman, and he was really tired, and there were multiple ways of getting him to leave his post. And if he did, he would drop a key, and then that would help you. Mm. Or, you know, you could try and ask the receptionist, or his business partner was in the lobby, and you could try and say to him, oh, that paper you're working on is shit. It's terrible. It's going to get canceled. The whole conference is canceled. Like, you know. The NVIDIA one was the one that worked the best.
It's like they're trying to do, like, talking-based immersive Sims.
Yeah.
Right.
Effectively what it was.
This is just a demo. This is not,
Sure.
And it was cool, and it was, in terms of reaction time for them, it was quick. It was not Microsoft Sam. I mean, ethics abound about... I'm not sure if it was an AI-generated voice completely, but, like, I know NVIDIA does have some of that tech.
Mm-hmm.
Characters had emotional intonation and everything, but... It definitely still didn't feel right. It didn't feel like there was someone crafting an experience for you. Mm. I also wonder about people who maybe don't... I don't know, people who don't know how to respond in social situations like that, for example. Like, there was no hint system at all to try and push you forward. It was all just, you know, you have to talk to people.
I wonder how...
happened to us. Like, it happened to me, definitely. I don't know about you, but they were like, play it. And I hit the button, I was like... I don't know what to ask this thing. Like, where do I start? Like,
right.
It's overwhelming because you're like, what are the limits of this?
Yeah.
The first thing you just be like is, how do I solve this mission? Like, you know, that kind of thing.
But the characters have guardrails for sure. And then there was the Ubisoft one, which was, they did a GDC talk on it. There was definitely tweets.
I saw the tweet for that one.
That one was definitely like not as good. It was interesting just to see, it kind of provided a little wrinkle to gameplay. So it was this mission where you had to become friends with someone who would eventually become your infield buddy. And so the whole thing was you quizzing them and them quizzing you. And you had to build up a rapport.
Yeah.
And that's when I asked him if he was a child of divorce. And he said, terrifyingly, no, my parents are still together, but my ex-wife and kid are no longer in the picture. I was like, what does that mean? Did you kill them?
But you're still talking? Like, there's still a mic?
Talking with a mic. And then that was kind of the first part of it. And then the second part was... You were looking at a a map of a of an apartment, and you had to basically plan an infiltration route to get something out of the safe. And there was someone with you, and you basically had to convince them why your route was better. So it'd be like, hey, how should we scale this window? Should we use a ladder or a grappling hook? And then I would say, oh, we should use a grappling hook. And they'd go, I don't think so. Why? And then you would give your justification, and they'd go, oh, I think you're right. So it was very rudimentary. Mm. And the other one was watching someone guide a drone, and you would just chat with the other character about, hey, what's going on? Why is the drone stopping? And that, it felt clunky. Mm.
Yeah.
Super,
yeah.
Super clunky.
Yeah.
Not as bad as Convey.
Convey was like real rough.
Convey was rough.
That's the Ubisoft one?
No, that's the other one. That's the third party.
This was the Nvidia Ubisoft.
Yeah, Ubisoft was at the Nvidia appointment that we were at.
Convey was like, firstly, Microsoft Sam. Like, it just sounded like a robot voice.
Oh, okay.
It's being used in like Second Life.
Yeah, and like, if the thing, so the issue I found was, one, there's that gap between you saying something and then it like figuring it out, where it's just like standing there looking at you.
This is the thing, like, Nvidia's, the power behind Nvidia is insane, and this is not going to be implemented immediately because of the sheer like processing power it requires. It requires it to be online. Like, this is tech.
It's tapping into your GPU, the cloud, all this. Yeah.
The other thing I found was like, I don't want to hear my own voice when I'm playing a video game.
I don't.
Like, I don't either. I don't want to be. Because you're supposed to put yourself, like, oh, if I'm, like, putting myself in the shoes of, like, Corvo or Tano, I'm trying to be, like, Corvo, and then I'm like, where do I find this key?
I'm
not Corvo anymore.
I don't want to turn my social anxiety and awkwardness into a game mechanic.
There's a layer of theater role play that they're asking you to do that I think a lot of people just, like, don't
I just don't want to do. I think the most useful part of everything we saw was the NVIDIA, like, tool where it's just a big text box, and you just, like, put in information, and then the AI just uses that, like Lucy said, and you can set like guardrails or personality stuff, and then the AI basically bases its entire personality history and like the way it behaves off that text. So it could be really an interesting way to make NPCs more have more depth without putting in a crazy amount of work, you know. Instead of having that one NPC who's just constantly going, I like turtles.
See you later.
See you later. Or something like that.
See, I kind of... That's the stuff I love in games, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing where it's like, you still very much need a narrative designer and writer to fulfill all that stuff. But the human touch was so missing on...
Yeah.
I mean, just that tweet from Ubisoft where it's like, hi, my name is blah, blah, blah. I'm from the Resistance, and we're here fighting the Megacorps. Yeah. Let's get to know each other better with this quiz. And I was like, who? What? Like,
he
what?
Was like, something like, extreme or something.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, we're going to be an epic duo.
Epic duo.
He said epic duo repeatedly. Like,
and I'm just like, I don't know if this was like the human touch added in to, or like the AI, but like either way, I was like, this is like really awkward. And
Lucy's
bad.
Right, like, it's so far away from being like ready to do anything like within games. I think like right now it's a bunch of people justifying it to themselves right now.
Oh, 100%, yes.
And I don't mean that like as a like I'm not talking down to anyone. I think they need to do that to build upon it.
But to convince people to give them money for it,
exactly.
To invest in
and
it,
like,
you know?
Maybe one day it'll get to a place where we can use it in games, but right now it's just like it pales in comparison to having actual humans working on characters and stories and that kind of stuff. And it feels like what was that game from a really long time ago that Danny was obsessed with, about you talking to a mic? It's like
Seaman,
facade or something like that. See, it was basically Seaman, but it was a couple that you walked into their apartment and clearly they just had an argument, and then you'd like ask questions and they'll be weird about it.
Oh, I've never heard
I think it might
be
called Facade or something like that. I remember it. But it's basically a super high end version of that. And it's like that was from like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it Milo?
I was about to bring up Milo.
Is that the one?
Milo. Yes.
Where Peter Molyneux was like
a child.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that game. That seems kind of interesting. But yeah, that Milo, yeah, it's interesting to think of that Milo. What is it?
How the facade screenshot. It just says, how about a threesome? Like, great, okay.
Great. But I mean, like, the Milo thing was so funny because it was like completely smoke and mirrors. Like, it was all fake. Yeah. Yeah. And what? That was like 10 years ago, and now we're in a place
where, I think,
like,
it was more than 10 that.
10 plus, because it was 2013.
Oh, yeah, wow.
So,
Milo
would have been
2012,
2013. Yeah.
Okay, so like almost 15 years. Interesting to see that we are actually now in that place. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, it doesn't seem there yet. Also, the ethics around it, yes. The taking away jobs, how are you sourcing all of this? Are you feeding off of other people's writing and work and then all those things that just make it like where I'm just like, I don't want to touch any of that. Yeah.
That's without even like considering the uncanny valley of it all. Like, if you want to try and implement that in high-end games where the technology presents a super high fidelity world and have this technology which isn't able to match it, you break the immersion so hard. And that was the problem with Convey. Like, they played this game which is like a cyberpunk style game. It's like super high, like glossy, good graphics. Mm-hmm. And then the characters were behaving like numpties.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I even think of like just game design wise, do you really want the player to stop and just have a conversation with an NPC for 20 minutes? Like, is that even good? Like, do you want that kind of pacing? Like, sure, there are some NPCs in games that I like enjoy getting to know and chatting with, but they are written and like there's intent behind the words that they say and the actions that they do, right? And I feel like even if you are able to kind of like tune these characters a certain way, there's still not really that intent behind.
There's also the limitation of you can only have that happen in the like voice, but like as far as like you know animations and like what actually they do, so it's like they could say whatever they want, but you can't be like, you know, you could be like, oh hey, do you have like a thing back there, and they could be like, yes I do, and be like, can you get that for me? They can't do that.
Sure,
like,
can. And then stand still.
Yeah. Just stand still, right? Like, so it's like...
Pull it out.
There's a bunch of technologies that are still very nascent that need to also be in parallel, advanced to the degree where it can keep up with an AI working on it. Like the audio stuff, the voices. Even when we did the NVIDIA one where it sounded good, the delivery of the lines was terrible. Like they couldn't, like they didn't know when to pause properly and when how like to the intonation part of it. And so, you know, someone who's like, oh, we can just like train, we can do this the ethical way and train our AI, our voice AI based on, you know, Troy Baker, once Troy Baker has given us permission and like is involved in this, you can do that. And the thing will sound like Troy Baker, but it won't be able to deliver the lines in a way that can present emotion.
Yeah.
And to get to that point, we'll have to figure out how to make an AI know what an emotion is and alter the way it speaks and behaves to reflect that. And that feels like it's like computationally so far away from being like a reality that and it so much hinges on stuff like that working that the whole AI being involved to like make characters, it feels like a pipe dream. I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime.
I agree. Largely, I think financially, it just doesn't feel very viable. Like you said, the amount of like computing power and effort you need to even get to like what we have right now, like AI, like ChatGPT, like loses like thousands of millions of dollars.
Yeah, it's not the predominant AI anymore. It got overtaken by another one.
Right. Yeah. So like, I don't think this stuff is going to be prevalent in the way I think people think it is anytime soon.
Yeah. I think the closest we get is like developers use it as like in a early phase of development where it's like you just need to sandbox or like gray box stuff and just place characters in place and, you know, just put these people here. And then that's like the foundation, which then you go in and then build everything you want by hand on top of it. Like that's the closest I reckon we get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like they already use like a Microsoft SAM as like filler text. You know, just to like you could use an AI one just to like make it sound a little bit more authentic as filler, as blanket text, but then please go and actually replace it with a proper person that you paid.
What was the game? Oh, it's Prince of Persia. Remember?
Oh, where they left one in there?
Oh,
yeah. It got patched before I got to hear it. So
it's so funny because it's the same voice they use for TikTok, and I was like, "What's TikTok?"
This is my voice.
I finally beat that game over the weekend.
Great,
I
TikTok.
Extended it. Yeah, I beat TikTok. I don't have to use it anymore. I'm done.
If you ever scrolled too much on TikTok, where they give you a video that says, "Hey, maybe stop."
Yeah, I had that.
And they're custom, like they don't look like. You should stop videos. Like mine was a guy playing piano, and then instead of singing, he just turned and goes like, "Don't you think you should stop scrolling now?" And I was
wow.
like, "What the fuck is this?"
And they're all AI generated. No.
No. But yeah, mm-hmm. good luck to AI. It's not ready for prime time yet.
No.
Nowhere near.
No.
Yeah.
Cool. Jake, is there anything else you've been checking out other than Dragon's Dogma?
I mean, I'm continuing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
True.
I really like it. Still having a good time, except I got to that.
Wait, where are you up to?
South Coral. It's after Golden Saucer.
Oh, so you're like in the Coral. Desert.
I'm in the desert.
You're in the buggy, right?
Yeah. I wasn't sure if the buggy was a spoiler, but yeah, I got the buggy. But I got to that stupid goblin who's like, you got to do the cactuar smashing. And I was like, I can't. I tried it once and I was like, I can't do this right now.
It's almost as if the pacing of that game is disrupted by the mini games and makes it annoying.
See, I've been enjoying most of the mini games for the most part, but every now and then one shows up that I'm like,
can't all be bangers.
I hate this. And that cactuar one, I really do not like. And I think mostly I just don't like that troll or whatever it is, because it's just like, why are you dressed like a normal dude? Like,
it's very
what
weird.
What are you doing here? Like, what is happening?
Chill. He's not chilling.
No, I don't like him. I don't like him at all. Don't like him. Yeah, no. But no, I've been enjoying that. That's pretty much it. I've just, it's Final Fantasy Dragon's Dogma. And then I started Unicorn Overlord, but I only played like 20 minutes and I was like, what am I doing? I got a bunch of other games I need to play. That's it.
Is anyone watching X-Men 97?
No.
I'm going to wait till more episodes are out.
Christ.
I hear it's very good.
It is good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is very good. I watched episode 3 last night in bed. Like, I was like, I'm going to watch it before I go to bed. So I'm like actively looking for new episodes. It's that good.
Can you watch the original series as well? Like on
Disney? It's on Disney Plus, yeah. But I believe it's on Disney Plus. But it picks up basically after where that ends.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. They do some things that I never would have expected to see on a X-Men TV show. I mean, like an animated show, but like they are pulling some real deep cuts for especially if you know the X-Men history. There's some characters in there that you're like, remember when they did the Phoenix in the original series?
Mm-hmm.
They've got one like that, which is like, this is crazy. Why did you put this character in and do it this well? But yeah, it's a really fascinating, really well done continuation of a series that is a little more overt with its criticism and commentary on the world.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Obviously, X-Men has always been about that.
Yeah.
You know, exploring the kind of the feeling of being outsiders and all that comes with it. But this one is like, in our day and age, it is taking cues from things that have happened in real world history to try and delve deeper into some of that stuff.
That's how they made it woke.
Unfortunately for the people that are upset about it, I hate to break it to you, X-Men was always woke.
What? Like,
that was the point of the X-Men. The people are very upset about it. I'm like, oh, tell me you don't know what X-Men is without telling me you don't know what X-Men is. And there is it. There it is. Yeah, but they like really have come up with some interesting dynamics for characters. Mm-hmm. Like friends become enemies, enemies become friends, that kind of thing. And you're like, oh, relationships are like very strained, and characters you wouldn't imagine would get on are like getting on now, and it's very well done.
They should do a continuation of the 2000s X-Men next. That's the one I watched.
Behave. The TV show, a cartoon.
Yeah.
Evolution.
Yeah, Evolution. Yeah.
Oh yeah. They should do that. That was really good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That was good. I think the movie.
No. They made 20 more of those sequels to the movie.
I can't remember if it was a real rumor, but I think there was some like discussion. I had whispers that they might be doing the same for Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man series.
Oh.
Which
watched the shit out of that as a kid.
That was a good one. And that ended. Actually, that ended in a way where
I don't remember how it ended.
A plot line is very similar to what the X-Men is doing now.
Interesting.
And I won't say which one, but there was a period where like the Madam Web stuff came into play in that, and
right, yeah. Madam Web was a huge part of that. That's how I like found out who Madam Web was.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Sony, now's the time. The sooner she's there,
yeah, it's
get Dakota Johnson in.
Get her in. She can return the role.
It's the X-Men 97 is well worth watching, and I genuinely, I know people are waiting for it. You can wait for it. I'm happy. I really am enjoying the week to week element of it because it reminds me of being a kid and watching an episode and then knowing I have to wait until next week.
Yeah.
And this time, like, mark my calendar to it. And also, I feel like they clearly know that they're working the weekly release cycle into the way it's formatted and written and that kind of stuff, because it ends in ways which you're like, oh my God, what does that mean? And then you have to wait for a week. It's like that Lost style thing where it's like, Lost wouldn't be that interesting if you had like every episode available to you. It's not a good binge watch. But like that, like the last episode, the reason I watched it yesterday at like 11 p.m. is because I really wanted to know what the next scene would have been after the episode 2 that I watched. So I do encourage people to like watch it as it's coming out if you can.
Have you never watched the original, or it's been so long that you like barely remember anything? Is it something you can pick up?
Yes, it is, but that's where some of the writing awkwardness comes in, especially in episode 1, because they do try and reintroduce characters, remind characters, or tell new people who these characters are. So it'll do something like, Cyclops, what are you doing? He's like, my eyes hurt because there's lasers coming out of it. Like that kind of thing.
Yes.
Or like, my name is Morph. I can turn into anyone, but no one that I can love me or something like that.
Here's a bunch
of
people who've known each other for years explaining why.
They have to like reintroduce themselves. Like, so you'll have characters saying their full name for some reason. Hello, it's me, Hank McCoy.
Hi, Jean Grey here.
Yeah, exactly. So they have that element of it, and it's like clunky in episode 1, but it's over after episode 1. It's largely fine.
Okay.
And the dynamics are so episode 2 is quite something. It is like a recent American event that has been very controversial is used as a touch point in it. Which is really, really
interesting. Do the X-Men storm the Capitol?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't see your face, so I was like, uh-oh, did I just...
Basically, yeah. That is exactly what happens.
Oh, my chair sank.
But yeah, it's really good. Very surprising. I'm surprised at how good it is, and I'm excited
for
it to come back. And also, like, they are, like, building off that world of the original.
Yeah.
Because, like, Bishop is around, and he's, like, he comes in midway, I think, through the series, because they go to, like, the Days of Future Past era where Cable's knocking around, and Bishop as well. And he's about in the new series, because I think they ended with him being in their timeline. But it's really, really cool. I am surprised at how much I'm enjoying it.
Cool. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to check it out, but maybe
100% recommend it.
Maybe I will.
It's Disney Plus.
Yeah,
right?
It's also got the cheesiness of the 90s in it, which is surprisingly
good. Okay.
The way they behave is like they've written it to be from that era.
In a way that feels authentic as opposed to like trying to
They're not trying to be that way. There's like an awkwardness to some characters. Jubilees are still a bit weird, which is very 90s.
They throw in a couple off-model shots, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
There are moments where you're like, that drawing looks a bit weird. Why is it like that? And the only thing that really sticks out as something that I'm like not struggling with, but like it can occasionally pull me out, and it's only because like I watch so much of the original, is the voices are different.
Sure.
Jennifer Hale is Jean Grey, which makes perfect sense because she played Jean Grey in Marvel vs. Capcom, which is probably the best version of her in a long time for me. But the guy who's playing Wolverine is that voice.
Is it not Steve Blum?
I don't think it is. I'm not sure. But at the very least, it doesn't sound like how I remember that version of Wolverine. He sounds like he's trying to do that. There are moments where he sounds exactly like it, but it's not consistent. Scott sounds exactly like you would think he sounds, but there's a couple of others that are a bit weird. Like,
interesting.
I remember you sounding a little different and a little better before, but it could be like rose-tinted glasses.
Sure. Well, cool. All right.
Make a video game based on that version of X-Men.
Oh, like my God.
Beat 'em up. Give that to WayForward and let them make the new X-Men 97
arcade machine.
That would be so good.
That would be really cool. Yeah, I'd be into that.
But keep the Welcome to Die quote in there.
Oh, of course. Need that one. Yeah, there's no way they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the achievement will pop up. Yeah. And then
that would be it.
Well, cool. All right. I think that's a podcast.
That is a podcast.
Yeah,
that is
a podcast. I gotta go write a whole thing about
you gotta write a whole thing. Look forward to that from Lucy.
Early next week. If I can write the cool things. Yeah, I saw Dune Awakening at PAX. Behind closed doors thing.
Yeah.
Ooh. I can talk about that now because the embargo has lifted.
But, right.
Has it? It sounds cool.
Oh, yeah, cool. It's really cool.
Sounds really cool.
Okay,
it
great.
It seems really cool.
Excellent.
Well, we didn't touch it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm just like, we saw a behind closed doors thing.
Yeah, everything. It seems like Funcom is basically looking at every, because all of their MMOs haven't been like crazy World of Warcraft successful, but they've each had something interesting in it that sets it apart.
Dick sliders.
Yeah, exactly.
Dick sliders, yeah.
Peen sliders. And I feel like they've got to the point now where they're like, if we take all of those cool ideas and put them in one game in the Dune universe, that is a great game. That is going to be a decent game to play. And it seems like that's what they're doing now. They have like it's a survival MMO. So you have a survival phase on Arrakis. Mm. And then there's a political phase,
that's
which
the end
is
game.
Like,
yeah, kind of sounds like Rust.
Yes, they took a lot of inspiration.
Yeah, they were like, Rust is an important part of it. And it's collaborative and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, because I like the idea of Rust, but playing Rust is probably one of the most miserable experiences I've ever had in my life.
Yeah. There's like an area where like it gets wiped every week because of sandstorms.
Yep.
The PvP area. There's one like that's the massive, that's where the giant sandworm appears only. Because they needed to create a massive space for it. Shai Halud. And then in the other places, you get the smaller sandworms, which are still pretty big and will kill.
Can you ride them?
They are working on that, they said.
Great.
And there's all this, like, you have to conserve water.
They showed a steel suit.
Yeah, steel suits. And,
they should make Star Wars Galaxies, where like it's really hard to ride. Like only one person can like ride a sandworm at a time.
They will do that because it's got enough like restrictions on how you can, like, if you move around in the sun, you rapidly will lose water, and you have to you get heat stroke. You need to try and stay in the shadows. And if there's a sandstorm coming, like, and you're not away from it, you will die. And the only way to like chance of survival is finding a strong enough outcropping of rocks to hide behind or something like that. But it looks really cool based on what we've seen so far. And for the most part, those Funcoms like MMOs, people say they're good, play them. They just don't have that kind of crazy staying power that people expect from MMOs to be successful.
Yeah, that's kind of felt about the Conan one. Like, yeah, I thought it was neat, but stick with it.
Yeah,
I played a little bit of Conan, and it was fun, but it was pretty brutal. It was just like, all right, I died. I don't really want to do all this.
I think this one's a lot more welcoming to newcomers. Yeah. Speaking of, please, I gotta go write this thing.
Okay, I'm on. All right, well, look forward to that from Lucy. Jake, do you have anything you want to quickly plug?
The Wild Bastards preview from GDC is now up. If you want to listen to some more focused thoughts on that, I know I talked about it on the podcast last week, but it's there. That's it.
Excellent. Tam, anything you want to plug?
No.
Okay, cool. I don't have anything I want to plug either. Let's get out of here. Thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Tam, hit that outro button for me. Thank you.